My very special guest tonight is Wendy Vardaman. Wendy Vardaman lives here in Madison, and she's the co-editor, well, one of the co-editors of Verse Wisconsin, which is published, I think, four times a year. Is that right?
Three times a year.
And she has an article, at least the first part of her article in the latest issue of Verse Wisconsin. And the second part, actually, you can see the whole thing actually online. What's that web address?
It's versewisconsin.org.
Okay, versewisconsin.org. You can find the complete article there. Again, I'll repeat. Wendy Vardaman is my guest, and Wendy, welcome to Radio Literature.
Thanks, Norman.
Is this your second time?
This is my second time. I was reading some of my own poetry earlier this year, and now I'm back to talk about sonnets with you.
Yes. Well, actually, I've had Wendy's daughter as a guest before.
That's right. Yes.
Her daughter, who is, how old is she?
She Greer is 18.
She's 18, and she's a very accomplished actress. So I've had her here as part of the Young Shakespeare Players. And I hope to have her and them again in the future, in the near future, I hope, in fact. Wendy, besides being the co-editor of Verse Wisconsin, has also published a book of poetry called Obstructed Views, published by Fireweed Press in 2009. And, of course, her poems and reviews and other writings have appeared in many anthologies and journals. Wendy Vardaman has a PhD in English from the University of Pennsylvania, and I found this really intriguing, a BS degree in engineering from Cornell University. Yes. So did you decide to, were you a poet when you were studying engineering, or did you become a poet later?
Well, I was writing poetry as an undergrad and studying it, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. But today we're another time, even though she's been here before, another time I hope to have Wendy here when we can talk about more personal things. But we want to talk about the subject of her article in Verse Wisconsin, which is the sonnet. And before we get into that, though, I want to let you know that tonight we're going to be giving away two books. One is the Margaret George's novel, which seems to be the talk of the nation right now. Elizabeth I, and the other book is by Esme Raji Cordell, and it's called How to Get Your Child to Love Reading. Both of these are big, thick books, and you can get them free, but we'll tell you about that later, because we don't want you to call now during the conversation. We want you to call after our conversation is over, so I'll let you know when to call in just a few minutes. So, Wendy, you mentioned in the article that you had been rereading T.S. Eliot's famous article or essay. Could you tell us a little bit about that, and then we can perhaps segue into the sonnet?
Well, I mentioned that essay because it talks a lot about the idea of tradition and originality. So it's tradition and the individual talent. I guess there's a kind of tension in for poets with wanting to do things by the rules, and then also breaking the rules and innovating. And so the question of how you innovate for me is a really interesting one at this point. But I was actually talking about having reread that many years ago when I was really starting to write again, and how I felt like the article had given me permission to not be original, at least for a while, not to try to innovate and to explore my poetic voice within the tradition, which is, yes, I think, what a lot of sonnet writers are interested in doing.
So you seem to have gotten permission to do just the opposite of what we've come to expect people to do. Usually people want permission to break the rules.
That's right.
And
that's
you want
right.
permission
and
to
I,
stop
I, well,
breaking the
and,
rules.
And I like breaking the rules, too, and I actually spend a lot of time in my poetry doing that now,
yes,
as do a number of other people whose work I brought tonight. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's also important to spend some time, if you're interested in writing formal verse, traditional verse, any verse at all, in learning those rules and practicing them and working within the tradition, at least for a while. I think that that makes people better poets,
oh,
even
yes.
if they come eventually to break the rules.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think most people, when at least most Americans, when they think of sonnet, the word sonnet, or think of a sonnet, they probably think Shakespeare's sonnets.
That's right.
Because
yes.
this seems to be such a common phrase in the
right.
language.
Right.
And many people might think that all sonnets are by Shakespeare.
Right. And he did write 154 of them
mm-hmm.
that we have and that I love and, mm-hmm. and enjoy. And in his time, he did his own rule breaking as well,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting thing to think about. I talked a little bit about that in my article. And, of course, in English, we call the English sonnet usually the Shakespearean sonnet,
mm-hmm.
so that's as opposed to the Italian sonnet,
yes.
which we associate with Petrarch,
yes.
who was the big practitioner of sonnets in Italy
yes.
a little before Shakespeare. Mm-hmm.
Now, could you tell us, in simple terms, what the difference is between the Petrarchan sonnet and the Shakespearean sonnet?
Well, both sonnets, both the Petrarchan and the Shakespearean sonnet, have 14 lines, which is usually how we identify a sonnet, generally written in what we call iambic pentameter verse. But the Shakespearean sonnet has a different rhyme scheme than the Petrarchan. The Petrarchan is usually written in 8 lines and 6 lines.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shakespearean sonnet is 4 lines, 4 lines, 4 lines, and then a final rhyming couplet that can kind of be sort of thudding into the thing if you're not doing it really well.
Yes.
The Petrarchan sonnet, there's a kind of, the 8 lines have only 2 rhymes. There's a kind of building to a break, and then a change, and then it kind of gets quieter again often, whereas the Shakespearean sonnet is one thing, then another thing, then another thing, then a ba-boom
yes,
at the end.
Yes, yes.
So.
Well, why don't you read us a sonnet? I don't know if you brought one by Shakespeare to read or
well,
not.
Well, I did bring something to read by Shakespeare. I thought a lot about one of the 154 sonnets. I love them, but I actually brought something else to read from Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
which is really an embedded sonnet in his play Romeo and Juliet.
Mm.
And so that's maybe something that people wouldn't expect or recognize, but I think a really interesting innovation already in his time
mm-hmm.
that he did. So this is a passage that's spoken between Romeo and Juliet
mm-hmm.
when they first meet at the party at her parents' house. And it goes back and forth. First it's Romeo in the first 4 lines, then it's Juliet. Then in the next 6 lines, they go back and forth in an interesting kind of way. If I profane with my unworthiest hand this holy shrine, the gentle fine is this, my lips, 2 blushing pilgrims ready stand to smooth that rough touch with a tender kiss. And then she says, good pilgrim, you do wrong your hand too much, which mannerly devotion shows in this. For saints have hands that pilgrims' hands do touch, and palm to palm is holy palmer's kiss. Have not saints lips and holy palmer's too? And then she replies, I pilgrim lips that they must use in prayer. And then he says, oh then, dear saint, let lips do what hands do, then pray. Grant thou, lest faith turn to despair. And then she says, saints do not move, though grant for prayer's sake. And he ends the sonnet, then move not, while my prayer's effect I take. So it's a lovely back and forth
yes.
between the two of them. It's a,
yes.
it's a wonderful sonnet, but then there's also this delightful repetition of the words, and he says, he uses a word, she repeats it
yes.
with a different meaning, and it goes back and forth between them. And,
yes.
and also in the first two quatrains, I think it's really interesting that They both use the word this and kiss as a pair of rhymes, a really nice touch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I guess some people who weren't as fortunate as I was to be introduced to Shakespeare at a fairly early age don't think of Shakespeare as having humor.
No,
that's
right.
Serious,
right.
But Shakespeare is full of humor.
Right, and this is quite funny, and
yes.
lots of plays on words,
yes.
And he's trying to persuade her
yes.
to do something that she's not going to
yes.
to
yes.
want to do. And I'd like to mention that this poem I'm reading from a book that's just a wonderful book.
Mm.
If anybody's interested in learning more about sonnets, it's called The Penguin Book of the Sonnet: 500 Years of the Classic Tradition in English, and it's. A rather recent book of 2001. It's edited by Phyllis Levine.
Mm.
So it's just terrific, and it has it starts out with Thomas Wyatt, and then takes you up to some wonderful contemporary
uh-huh.
examples of sonnets. And actually, about I would say half of what's in here are sonnets that have been written since by people. Born since 1900.
Oh, I see.
And then the other half is before that.
Mm.
So there's really just an explosion of work
yes.
that's been done
uh-huh.
in the last 100 years in
yes.
the sonnet.
Uh-huh.
So very neat. And a lot of it here in Wisconsin, too.
Uh-huh.
So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there. I've discovered since I've been here, I've been here in Madison now for over 10 years, and I'm always discovering new writers. There are a lot of people writing in Wisconsin.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite writers that I discovered recently, and over the last few years, and we've had him on Radio Literature a few times, is Richard Rowe.
Yes, Richard's a wonderful
yes.
poet.
Yes. And
yeah.
I love talking to him about poetry
yeah.
as well as reading his poetry.
Yeah. I didn't bring any of his poems tonight, but I did bring one by our former poet laureate, Marilyn Taylor.
Oh, Marilyn Taylor, yes.
And she's one of the authors. There are three authors that I talked about in the article that you read.
Uh-huh.
And I talked about one of her sonnets, a sonnet by
yes.
Ron Wallace, who's at the university,
yes. Yes.
and then a sonnet by a younger poet who was here as a poetry fellow
uh-huh.
at the university, John Marijo,
uh-huh.
who just came out with his first book last year.
Oh.
So, but I do have one of Marilyn's.
Well, we're going to have a minute interlude
yeah.
here, and so when we come back, you can
okay.
tell us about Marilyn Taylor.
Sounds great.
Her sonnet. So we're going to get back to Wendy Vardaman. She was telling us about the former poet laureate of Wisconsin, Marilyn Taylor, and she has a sonnet, I think, by her.
That's right. And I think one of the things that people also forget that you can do with sonnets, and this is something that a number of contemporary poets are really great at doing, is telling both little stories and also giving characters, rendering characters through sonnets. And Marilyn does that just so well. And this sonnet is called Aunt Eudora's Harlequin Romance.
Mm.
She turns the bed lamp on. The book falls open in her mottled hands. And while she reads, her mouth begins to quiver, forming words like breathless, promises, elope. As she turns the leaves, Eudora's cheek takes on a bit of bloom. Her frowsy hair thickens and turns gold, her dim eyes clear. The wattles vanish from her slender neck. Her waist, emerging from its ring of flesh, bends to the side. Breasts that used to hang like pockets rise and ripen. Her long legs tremble. Her eyes close. She holds her breath. The steamy pages flutter by, unread, as lover after lover finds her bed. So it's really a lovely, I think, rendering depiction of a character.
Yes.
You could really imagine Aunt Eudora there. And one of the things I talked about in my article was how Marilyn had used that shorter line, like breathless promises elope, to really get you to pause and imagine Aunt Eudora and really savor that that moment with her when she's in her imaginings of her of the lovers in these books.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You mentioned at the start of the program, when you introduced the subject of the sonnet, you mentioned iambic pentameter.
That's right.
Is there any way you could explain that without giving an hour lecture?
Da-dum, 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 da-dum. How's that?
Okay.
Iambic pentameter just means it's 5 feet, and each da-dum is a foot. And then it tells you you've got 2 syllables in a foot, and the accent usually comes on the 2nd syllable when you're talking about iambic.
Oh, yes.
But poets do use, from Shakespeare forward and before that as well, variation to really call attention. Mm-hmm. In that passage that I read from Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare inserted some inversions of the iamb. So instead of a da-dum, you got a dum-da, when he was really trying to break the line and draw your attention. Romeo does that a number of times when he's trying to persuade Juliet to do what he wants. And here in Marilyn's piece, she uses a couple of shorter lines in order to get you to pause with Aunt Eudora, which I think is very nice. And I brought another example, but from another poet that I talked about in the article, which if we've got...
Yeah.
That does, I think, just a really neat job with that, too. This is Up Jump the Boogie is the name of the book, and the poet is John Morigio. And I think that he's just a wonderful, wonderful younger writer. This is his first book. And one of the things, another thing that that's possible in the sonnet is to take the individual sonnets and build them into longer storytelling units. And in Shakespeare's time, a lot of poets did what they called sequences of sonnets around the same themes. But it seems like right now, poets are more consciously putting sonnets together in order to tell stories. And this is from a series of 7 linked sonnets, which is called a crown of sonnets.
Could you repeat the poet's name?
John Morigio.
Oh, okay.
Morillo. And he's just a terrific poet. He was here for a little while at the university.
Yes, I remember.
And this is the first poem in Renegades of Funk. When we were 12, we taught ourselves to fly, to tuck the sky beneath our feet, to spin the world on fingertips, to pirouette on elbows, heads, and backs, to run away while standing still. So when Miss Jefferson, her eyebrows shaved and painted black, a spot of lipstick on her one good tooth, would praise the genius Newton, I knew then to keep her close, to trust her like a chicken hawk at Colonel Sanders. I refute your laws, oppressor. I'm the truth you cannot stop. Busting head spins on her desk, a moonwalk out the door. Referred to Mr. Brown's detention, all them trying to keep us down. And then the second poem in the sequence starts up with a variation on that last line. Mm-hmm. And then each of the 7 poems is linked that way.
Okay.
Until you get to the very last one, and it comes around to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really dynamic way to link sonnets together, mm-hmm. and he uses it so well. And what the line that I wanted to point out, if we're talking about iambic and its opposite, which is trochaic, is that wonderful line, busting head spins on her desk, a moonwalk, because it inverts the iambic. It's not da-dum, 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 da-dum. It's dum-da, 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 dum-da.
Yes.
And it is a moonwalk, and he just does that so wonderfully through his words.
Yes.
and use of the rhythm. So...
We have a few more minutes. We probably have time to, if we read one more, you could either read another by John Morigio or by a different poet.
Well, and didn't you have something by Gwendolyn Brooks?
Well, I did, but I never could decide,
right.
So why don't we just let you go ahead.
And she's, I think that John took a lot of inspiration from Brooks in his poems.
Uh-huh.
So she's definitely someone I would send people to read.
Yes.
She's a wonderful, wonderful poet.
Yes.
Well, I would like to mention that we have, on the magazine, we did a special issue on formal poetry, which is what my article was part of. Mm-hmm. But we also ran a lot of poems that were poems in form. Mm-hmm. And we have about, I don't know, 60-some-odd poets whose work is on in the current issue at firstwisconsin.org. And the largest single group of poems are sonnets. So about a quarter of the people who were there sent us sonnets. And I brought one that's just so interesting by a young Wisconsin poet named Brent Goodman. And it's called "And So." And the thing about this that's so interesting is that it is a sonnet in which each of the lines is only one word.
Oh.
And so means circle in Japanese.
Okay.
And it's a kind of Zen symbol. And so, in the pines, the wind rehearses its verses. You there, too, where shadows grow.
Mm.
So, you know, there you have to ask yourself the question, is it a sonnet?
Yeah.
Is it really? I don't know. But, Brent says it is, and I'm willing to accept that.
Yes.
Another Wisconsin poet who does a lot of innovation is... B.J. Best plays a lot with the rhythm and the length of lines and has got a wonderful book called State Sonnets, which takes you through a number of different states.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be something I'd also recommend if readers are interested in Wisconsin sonnets.
Yeah. So I want to remind you that you're listening to WORT-FM, HD Radio, 9.9 on your FM dial, here in Madison, Wisconsin, and also on the web at WORT-FM.org. And this is Radio Literature. And remember, this is April, National Poetry Month, and we are giving away two books. If you call at 801, don't call before 801, but be sure to call at 801, 802, and if you're the first caller after 801, you can choose between Margaret George's Elizabeth I and Esme Rachi Codel's How to Get Your Child to Love Reading. And our time, unfortunately, is about up. But I want to thank Wendy Waterman for being our guest this evening.
Well, thanks very much for having me.